You're listening to the Better for America podcast, presented by AMAC, the Association of Mature American Citizens.
Hello, everyone. I'm Rebecca Weber. This is your AMAC podcast, Better for America. Today, we are privileged to have with us a very important thought leader in the conservative world, a former combat veteran who spent 27 years in uniform for our nation, concluding his military career as a colonel in the U.S. Army. Today, he is a distinguished trial lawyer, author of 5 books, and widely respected for his insights, sense of perspective, and sense of humor. Welcome, Kurt Schlichting, an enduring friend of AMAC. Welcome back with us.
Well, thank you very much. I want to clarify, the only combat I had was washing vehicles in the middle of the desert. I was a decontamination platoon leader. Hey, man, I was no Pete Buttigieg or Dick Blumenthal. You know, I'm no war hero. I just kind of showed up for 27 years.
Oh, boy. Well,
in a variety
we love
of places.
You for that. Yeah, I bet. I bet there are some great stories. I look forward to hearing some of them. Here, Kurt, I want to just mention, we had a chance when we met at CPAC in February. And since then, I've often thought, I'm serious about this. I wonder what Kurt thinks about this. Wish I could give him a call right now, because there's so much crazy stuff going on. And so finally, we have you here with us again. So to keep things a little light, at least for just a moment, before we dive into some of the troubling issues, maybe you could reacquaint us with a word that you educated me on last winter. And the word was squish. Can you help AMAC members remember what the word squish is and why we should be on guard and how not to be a squish?
Well, squish is one of my one of the words I wish I had coined it that I use in an effort to remain FCC compliant. There are other words that sum up these spineless invertebrates who pretend to be conservative, but never actually end up conserving anything. They bend like reeds. They fold like a house of cards. They are the conservatives who are super conservative around election time. And then they get to Washington and then they get lobbied and then they give in. And we're not putting up with them the way we used to. It used to be a largely squish caucus in the Congress. And now we've either got people in who are serious about conservatism or people who are so outright terrified of the base that they pretend to be. At the end, whether you are committed or you're just terrified of the voters, the result's the same. And I'm willing to do either one. Like the old Roman emperors, you know, it's good to be loved, but, you know, I'll take being feared.
Mm-hmm. If you could give someone the Squish Award, who might that be? Who
stands? Oh, well, gosh, I mean, I think it would have to be an oil wrestling fight between Liz Cheney and Adam Kinzinger right now. These two creatures are, I do understand why they don't become Democrats, because Democrats don't want them. Adam Kinzinger is about to have his new Democrat friends erase his district in Illinois. So he'll be off on MSNBC in the future, you know, once every couple of weeks, they'll have him on. And then Liz Cheney, she's going to lose in Wyoming, which is great. I don't understand their thought process. I guess they saw for a while that you could play out of both sides, you know, talk out of both sides of your mouth before social media. But now we've got a means to keep an eye on them, and we've got the inclination to do it. And if they think they can do the hardcore at home, softcore in Washington, this is not going to work. So I don't understand why they think it would. It's going to take a while to purge the squishes, but I think we're going to do it. The Republican Party is changing. The Republican Party is not getting away from what it should be, which is people concerned with freedom, people concerned with real free enterprise. And free enterprise is not giant mega corporations leveraging the government's power to get an advantage over, the smaller businesses. Free enterprise is everybody out on a level playing field, and may the best entrepreneur win. And I know you guys are very supportive of that. And I know that your constituency is very supportive of that. And that's why, you know, you guys are growing and your competition is stale and stagnant, because there's no energy in the miserable status quo. You look at, I mean, for all of Joe Biden's myriad problems, he's the perfect example of a status quo that no longer works, a 70-year-old establishment, mostly formed after World War II, that worked very well for a while in the 50s. We built America into a real superpower. 60s, you know, we changed America through a civil rights movement. We put a man on the moon. The 80s, we brought down the Soviet Union with at least not a direct shot. And now what do we have? We have a generation, you know, our establishment right now is responsible for Afghanistan, the Wall Street meltdown, and Grindr. Okay. These are not a litany of super achievements that will be written in the history book, except as cautionary examples. So America's changing. The post-war, every institution that came into being after the war is now old and exhausted. It's being run by the third generation. You know, everybody knows Henry Ford, right? Henry Ford, brilliant guy, not perfect guy, a lot of issues, but you know, he was an innovator. He created the assembly line, put a car in everybody's garage. Okay. The second generation, you know, the son was the backer of the Mustang. That's pretty cool. Anybody know a third generation Ford? I don't. I know a third generation Kennedy. He's parked outside a crack house, which I guess is better than being parked in a pond. The fact is, things get stagnant, things get old, things need to change. And that's where we're at. We're at a time when America is changing.
And it is such a testing time right now. I mean, it is truly testing, and things seem to be getting more testing by the week.
Yes.
Kurt, you have such depth experience serving in the U.S. military and as a distinguished senior officer. And so, like, we look around today, especially at the horrific, chaotic pullout from Afghanistan. Can you help us understand what you're seeing? Because we're told that thousands, I think over 15,000 Americans, thousands of Afghans who have helped us and believe that we would not leave them to the mercy of the Taliban. They're still at risk. We're told that the State Department failed to plan or understand or make provisions for what was likely to be a difficult transition. And we're told that Biden and Harris ignored key intelligence. So let me ask you, is this as bad as it really looks? And did this really need to happen? Did we need to see this chaos and this unfolding human tragedy? And then I need to ask you, what do you think that this means for the future of U.S. credibility in the world? For example, will China, Russia, other adversaries see this as a weakness and, you know, begin to make some more moves? How do you see all of this unfolding?
Well, I'm looking at it and I'm thinking, well, this isn't the army I was in. I think the situation is probably worse than we know. Mm-hmm. I look at it, it seems to be total chaos, seems to be total improvisation. One day, you're putting in 3,000 troops. Next day, it's 4,000 troops. Next day, it's 5,000 troops, then 6,000 troops. And of course, you know, one of the giveaways for me in the military is when you put a number down, when you say, well, I'm sending 1,000 troops. Well, a battalion's probably 500-600. Then you're going to need another 700-800 supporters. So when you start talking about numbers, you're not talking like a professional. Because 1,000 troops is not a combat formation. 1,000 troops is a number. If you say, hey, I'm sending in 3 battalions with support elements, oh, I know what that is. I know what its capability is. If you say 1,000, you're trying to make civilians feel better. And that doesn't make me feel better.
I mean, it's funny. Last night I was watching Laura Ingraham, and she said, I don't know why Biden gave out a number of, I'll decide in 24 hours if we're going to make any changes with what's going on and how we're pulling people out of Afghanistan. It just seemed odd. She said, why is he telling us within 24 hours? In other words, that's not the strategy. That's a time period. Yeah. But you're not really telling us much more. And I think he thinks he looks smarter, or maybe he feels that that's what accountability is all about. But what's just as important is not what he does, but how he does what he's going to say he's going to do. And our members get that. I mean, and I, you know, go ahead.
Well, look, what we have is a lot of people are confusing strategy and tactics, some of them because they don't know the difference, and some of them because they want to shift blame. The strategy was to pull out of Afghanistan. And frankly, that is a consensus strategy in the United States. Trump wanted to get out of Afghanistan. Biden wanted to get out of Afghanistan. Most Americans want to get out of Afghanistan. Now, exactly what that means is open to debate. But basically, they're talking about we're going to end normal combat operations in Afghanistan. Okay, we've decided after 20 years. And that's not an unreasonable strategy. Strategy is implemented through tactics. And the tactics we've seen, this wasn't necessary. You know, the secret of American success is logistics and planning. That's how we differ from other armies. Our guys are very brave and very good tactically, man to man. But at the end of the day, you put an 82nd Airborne Trooper with a rifle down against a Taliban guy with a rifle, and it's two guys with rifles. And there's some training and cultural bravery kind of things at stake. But it's not quite even, it's near to be even. Our advantage is logistics and systems and planning. We have capabilities that we know how to integrate and synchronize that other guys don't. You don't fight an American platoon. You fight an American platoon and its artillery and its air support and its helicopter support and its electronic warfare support and its logistics support and its medical support and its personnel support and all the other battlefield operating systems, its intelligence surveillance reconnaissance capabilities. So when you're fighting American platoon, you are fighting this huge iceberg where all the combat, the real combat stuff is below the surface that you don't quite see, but boy, you feel it because they'll kill you. And so the military is not, you know, when he starts talking, well, I'm just going to dump some troops in. I look at this and I'm thinking, okay, you got 6,000 guys on the ground. Where are you going to fly close air support from? Where are you going to do logistics from? You gave away Bagram, which was a place you could have done that with relative safety. I look at it, it's completely confused. As a military planner, and I did a ton of planning as an officer, most of what you do is planning. You know, even when you're a commander, you're working with planning. Planning and execution are the two things that you do. And I look at this and I'm like, you don't have the parameter. How many people are we getting out? Well, we don't quite know. Okay. Kind of a basic thing because everything is driven by the number of civilians. Unlike when we're talking about military forces, numbers of civilians do matter because that tells me how much food I need, how much space I need, how much air power I need to move them, and what I need to defend them because I understand the space that they're going to have to physically be in. And then maybe I understand what I have to do to get them there. And I'm looking at this thing, and I have no idea what the hell these people were thinking, if they were thinking at all. The simple fact is, and I don't want the military to escape blame for this. There's plenty of blame to go around, and I do enjoy the finger pointing between the intelligence community and the State Department and the White House and military, because they're all leaking to their friends about how the other guy did it. But, you know, focusing on the military, it's a complete disaster. I've written about this in Town Hall. We need to fire all these guys. You know, we have a Secretary of Defense who was a general who didn't win a war. We have a Chairman of the Joint Chiefs who's another four-star general who didn't win a war. And these guys have a track record of failure. Their focus is ridiculous. Anybody, look, you're not a serious military if you attempt to tell me that America's greatest strategic threat is the weather in 100 years or whatever the hell white rage is. That's just ridiculous. It's stupid and it's insulting. And the problem is they're focusing on this stuff. So, you know, you got China making fun of us right now. China, I don't understand for the life of me why Xi doesn't just look at Taiwan and say, hey, you're rejoining tomorrow and do it the hard way or the easy way, but it's happening. And what are we going to do? What are we going to do? We have a Navy that can't not set fire to its ships. That can't slam into them in the ocean. But gosh, they know that they're ready to validate the trans BIPOC experience. I mean, any military that puts Ibram Kendi on its reading list is not a serious military formation. You know, did you run out of Sun Tzu? Did you run out of Clausewitz? Because that's the stuff I read. That's the stuff the guys who won Desert Storm, the guys who were generals and colonels when I was a lieutenant over there, and we won our last war. That was what they were reading. They weren't reading about how America sucks. They were reading about how to defeat an enemy in battle.
It is just, it's unbelievable. It really is. I mean, just the other day, a few days back, I was in touch with Sarah Carter, and here we have this terrible unending border crisis, and she was down there. Amazing woman, great reporter. I mean, everything from human trafficking, drug trafficking, continuing waves of illegals coming over, people with COVID being sent to the heartland of America. All of this is adding so much pressure to our social and legal, educational, our elections, our future elections, our healthcare systems. I mean, it's unbelievable. And I just want to say, Sarah said that she saw thousands crossing the border, right? Unimpeded. Right. Now, here we have a president who, and we've got states, governors that are forcing, mandating lockdowns, and you can't leave your home, and you know, Americans that are trying to do the right thing day in and day out, and then we see a president who just sort of sits back and pretends that people aren't coming over, sick, human trafficking, drug trafficking. I heard that more people died in San Francisco because of drug overdose of fentanyl than they did of the COVID virus, and he doesn't want to talk about that. See, our members, they understand. They're very, very smart. They just have some great wisdom. So I need to ask you, how severe do you think the border crisis is? I mean, it sounds like kind of a silly question because I think most people listening understand the severity, but how do we really get a handle on it? How do we turn these surging waves back? And what can really everyday people do in your view?
Well, look, Donald Trump stopped the incursions. Look, this is a conscious decision by the Democrat Party to import a bunch of people from the third world to change the makeup of the electorate. Now, I think it's kind of funny. It's a very racist notion that they have, that somehow they're going to bring all these primarily Latin people over and they're all going to vote Democrat. When of course, the Republicans increased their share of the Latin vote. Don't call it Latinx. That's they hate that. My wife is a Latin immigrant, and let me tell you, not liberal. I'm not sure their plan is going to go quite the way they think it is. But still, I hear these idiots babbling about democracy. Well, I remember Saturday mornings that I'm Just a Bill song. You know, Congress passed law that said you can't come into the country. And if you are illegally, and if you do, you get deported. President signed it, became a law. And that seems to me democracy in action. And then you got a president who refuses to enforce the legitimately passed law because he doesn't like it. Seems kind of undemocratic to me. The problem for them is that they're changing the rules. If you have a set of rules that everybody plays by, everybody knows what the rules are, and you get protection from the rules when things don't quite go your way in politics, when you're in a down cycle. The problem is they got a slight up cycle with a very narrow majority, and they seem to forget that we're going to take things back. And I think when we do take things back, look, I think we deport all illegal aliens. I think we seal the borders. I mean, I think we enforce the law, and they're not going to like that, but I think that's what we need to do. That's the law.
Common sense. It's a common sense approach. It's what we know works. Let's go back to doing what we know works. I mean, we've got to have law and order in this country. It really just, in my mind, I think constitutional crisis, really. I mean, here we have a president who's doing all things so wrong, and There's no repercussion. There's no accountability. So I hope and believe that you're right, that 2022 will hopefully ring a bell. Go ahead.
Well, look, one of the key problems of our institutions and the establishment that runs them is lack of accountability. They don't believe that they should be accountable to peasants like us. And they get really huffy about it. One of the reasons is their unbroken track record of failure. I mean, they just fail all the time, and accountability really get in their way. The problem for them is they think they can tweak the status quo so that they're not like bound by all the rules, but we will be. But I keep saying, you know, I don't think Trump was our last chance. I think Trump was your last chance, a last chance to kind of recreate the previous status quo. I think what's going to come is going to be much more not to their liking. You're going to see a bunch of you're going to see America move to the right, and the left's going to scream because it's not going to like what we do. And this time, we're not going to say, "Gosh, this is really disruptive. This is, you know, I'm tearing apart the fabric of society. Maybe we should work at a bipartisan level." No, the standard is established. Jam down what you can on your opponents. Okay. And they're going to feel that. And they're going, and the funny thing is, they're going to be surprised because these guys don't seem to understand human nature. Most of them don't seem to get out of San Francisco, New York, or Washington and go meet real people. They don't get that you can't change the rules and expect other people to play by them. So I think we're in for some interesting times. I'm optimistic. I think we will win, among other reasons, for the fact that in 7 months they've turned a country that was relatively prosperous and coming out of a overhyped pandemic into a total disaster on every level. There's literally nothing going right for these people, and you can see that even some of the moderate Democrats are being energized. Some of the moderate Democrats, Nancy Pelosi has her first mini rebellion. It's not that rebellious, but it's at least a little bit defiant by 9 or 10 of her caucus. And she's only got 3 or 4 to play with at the margins, who are saying, you know, maybe $3.5 trillion isn't a great idea, you know, to be spending on CRT and the climate hoax and all the rest of that nonsense. There's literally nothing going right now. And I'm old enough to remember Jimmy Carter and the malaise. And I know that Jimmy Carter was followed by Ronald Reagan. Mm. So I'm optimistic.
Good point. We are too here at AMAC, and absolutely against the massive spending. It's obscene. You know, people forget how much $1 trillion is, how many zeros are attached there. Kurt, I wanted to ask you, you were about 9/11. You were in uniform on 9/11 and have served this country in many ways since that fateful day. And I have to return to the anniversary of that terrible day and ask you if you could maybe just reflect for a moment what the day meant for you, what it meant for our nation, and whether this many years later we've learned anything. What do you think every American should take away from the 20th anniversary of 9/11? Because, you know, after that period of time, we did seem so suddenly unified, but today we're so disunified. So how do we get back to understanding our strengths and defending them, back to a sense of appreciation for the ideals and our history that make this the greatest nation on earth?
Well, the loudest voices are the most leftist. And of course, the leftists want to tear down America so they can rebuild it in their image with them at the top. If you want to see the truth of leftism, it's not a bunch of workers, with a scythe and a hammer, in the Soviet realism pose. It's that party in Napa with Nancy Pelosi presiding over it, and a bunch of wealthy white people eating fine foods while their minority servers sit with masks ready to fill their Cabernet goblets. That is leftism in its truest form. Those people aren't the majority. The majority of Americans are normal. The majority of Americans are patriotic, and they've got to make their voices heard. And I think they will. They'll do it at the ballot box, and I think they will do it unequivocally. America, in the film Patton, it opens up with George C. Scott giving the famous speech. And one of the lines is, "Americans love a winner and will not tolerate a loser." We look at Afghanistan And I love how the media is stunned that this Afghanistan, that their narrative about how, well, you know, this isn't that bad. This is okay. Trump would have done it, is not working. You know, Biden is being held accountable and his numbers will continue to plummet. He is a failure. His ideology is a failure and Americans will see it. And including many of the immigrants they were counting on, they will also see it.
Isn't it odd, though, that he would have, it almost seems to go against the grain or against what's normal to be so proud to exit Afghanistan all around the 20th anniversary. Essentially, I mean, the Taliban must feel somewhat emboldened and almost call it a victory for themselves, right? I mean, what does Joe Biden not understand? What is he missing?
Well, I think he's missing quite a bit. It is so readily apparent that what we're facing now is an administration of amateurs who think they're professionals, of dumb people who think they're smart, of a bunch of faculty lounge losers who are trying to put theory into practice, and they've never put anything into practice successfully before. It's going to be, it's going to get worse before it gets better. I think it's going to get better, but it is going to get worse. And, you know, maybe America needs, I wouldn't say needs, but maybe America will understand, you know, what it has and appreciate it more once it comes close to losing it again, which is what we're doing. We're getting a preview of a miserable future, a future where all America is San Francisco, with bums on the streets, dodging human waste and needles on the sidewalk, crime. That's the future. Do we want it? That's the question. I think the answer is going to be no.
Yeah. Well said. Well put. Kurt, I want to thank you so much for being with us today.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, just about a time. You've given us so much good stuff to think about, as you always do. And I look forward to seeing you again soon. So thank you so much what you do for America, for your patriotism, for your conviction. And I also want to thank our AMAC members for tuning in today. If you haven't downloaded the AMAC News app, please do so. It's very, very easy. You can track breaking news, get all of that. Just hit the subscribe button, like, follow, and share wherever you are on social media. Until next time, I'm Rebecca Weber. Thank you, Kurt, for joining us. This is your podcast, Better for America. Thanks, everybody. Have a great day. See you next time.
Thank you for listening to the Better for America podcast. To learn more about AMAC and all it has to offer, visit us at www.amac.us.